Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Cy White and Ewan Pierson, it's a historic day in gaming history. All sorts of leaks left, right and centre. Call me the farmer, because I'm gathering the leaks, let me tell you. There's all sorts of things to talk about. That's the level of punnery that you can expect from the World Culture Gaming Podcast. Cy White, how are you doing?
All right. Head spinning. Lots going on, as you say. Like, what a bizarre day.
I know. I wanted to immediately DM both of you, and I was like, can I just talk at you for a bit about how ridiculous these things are, and can we discuss things? And you were like, I want to get food. I was like, no. Put that food down, Cy. We've got things to talk about. You and Patterson, how are you feeling?
I'm doing good, mate. I was just updating you on the bird content in the garden. Great. The robin's back. King's back. There was a chaffinch down earlier on. Everything's coming up. Birdhouse.
This is a very historic day for gaming history, and we'll get there, but what's your favourite bird?
Bullfinch, mate. I love a bullfinch.
Yeah?
They're really cute. They're called squeaky wheels, because the noise that they make when they tweet sounds like a squeaky bicycle wheel.
I'm a big fan of that. I tell you what I'm also a big fan of is big old leaks. So there's a lot of stuff to talk about here. I've just filmed a big old Takam blab summary video thing. We'll do some YouTube shorts from it as well, because there's lots of bombshells from this. This comes from apparently a series of attachments across some emails going wrong during the FTC Microsoft conversation, the whole investigation into acquiring ZeniMax and everything else. Some emails were filed wrong and they apparently leaked, and they've revealed not only the next Xbox system, the next main Xbox system, and they'll be coming after the series systems, but also the next Xbox Series X. There's also a conversation in here about how Microsoft slash Phil Spencer is aiming to take over Warner Brothers and Nintendo. And there's mention of Bethesda's entire slate, what they've got in development, what they've got coming up down the future. The next Doom game, there's mention of Dishonored 3. There's a whole bunch of stuff, but we're going to roll break it down. I'm pretty much just going to reuse the notes that I had from the news and make it more conversational. There's a lot of just, what the hell are they thinking stuff in here, but there's a lot of fun stuff in there as well. The first thing, the Nintendo acquisition. This is from an email between Phil Spencer, talking to some various executives. He's responding to someone asking, why is Nintendo not a more valuable target? You're not considering Nintendo. And he instead says, yes. He says, he refers to them as a career move. Acquiring Nintendo would be a career move, and says that they have to play the long game with them. He says that he has talked to the board of directors for Microsoft and that they are on board with doing it, though, and they're just waiting for the right offer to come around. He says that they're just waiting for the right sort of machinations to happen, but they're very much wanting to acquire Nintendo, very much wanting to acquire Warner Brothers, and because of the date of this email being 2020, ZeniMax is mentioned as well, but obviously that has already gone through or is going through. So it seems to be the overall way they want to go forward. Cy, do you want the Captain meme? Do you want the Xbox and Nintendo now? Is that the reality we want?
Oh God, this is so bizarre. Like, this is the first thing I read this morning. I'm like, what are you on, Phil Spencer?
Hello.
Like, I mean, as you say, you pointed out, it's from 2020, so who knows what conversations were happening then and what are not happening now. I expect, yep. I feel like this is Phil Spencer being like, yeah, we got it, we're sorted, it's in the bag. And Nintendo are just like, psh, like they probably have paid no attention to this. There's a bit at the end where Phil says something along the lines of, you know, I've been trying to convince them that they need to get out of the hardware game, mm-hmm. basically. But it's an uphill battle, and it's like the Switch is like one of the best-selling console of all time. What are you talking about?
Only way this would go through is if they abandon all that stuff. Like, if they just don't want to do a Switch anymore, and the only way to play the next Mario is in front of a Game Pass logo with an Xbox logo in front of him with his little green hat on. I don't think any of that would ever work.
You've got to admire the sort of like lofty dreams, but it's never happening. This is not like when Sega were bust and anyone could like kind of like, but I'll come over here and make games for us or whatever. Like Nintendo are in a pretty okay place, right?
Yeah, they're pretty okay.
They're
I feel like apparently, because I remember like in gaming history, I had to find the time period for this, but this is just before they launched the original Xbox. The Xbox sent one of their executives, Kevin Backus, over to Japan to talk to Nintendo about acquisition or to make games for the Xbox. And apparently they were laughed out the room. Apparently they laughed at them for about an hour solid. And they couldn't believe
that's
they were being
just the Simpsons
that.
Bit you're describing.
Literally. Yeah, and I love that like 20 years later, I mean, everything else is nostalgic from 20 years ago, so we've got to bring this back to try again. But Ewan, what do you think of everything about this?
It's I'm worried that Microsoft are going to buy me. It's like they're just when do they stop? You know, it like
they're coming for your bullfinches.
The whole they better not. It's just kind of wild to me. Like, I, as an Xbox person for so long, then I obviously switched across to PlayStation. I'm very conscious of coming on these podcasts, and then whenever Xbox news comes up, me being like, oh, that damn Microsoft stealing and buying everything, and I won't be able to play it anymore. But, you know, that is a factor to it. I just think it's very, it's just kind of, I get the impression of Phil Spencer in, have you seen Glengarry Glen Ross? You know Jack Lemmon's character in Glengarry Glen Ross? He inspired Gil Gunderson in The Simpsons. The scenario you've just described there of them going over to Japan and like being like, hey, Nintendo, I gotta tell you, you gotta get out of the physical media game. It's all gonna be cloud computing from now on. You gotta bet on that, and I'll the documents right here. We'll buy you. We'll totally buy you. And Nintendo's just like, actually, no, we're kind of like doing completely fine right now, so we don't need to buy anything. And Phil just kind of going, oh no.
I tell you the thing that'll thread throughout this is that they seem allergic to committing to new games. They're entirely all in on just acquisitions and it's almost like buying territory rather than what's inside that territory or making your own land or whatever the hell it is. They just, what was the last thing that they nurtured from the ground up? Because I was going back through Xbox history, and obviously it's been a talking point for many years that like, obviously they acquired Halo, they acquired Gears of War, you know, they bought Bungie, they bought Epic, and to make those games. And it's like, when was the last time they had something from the ground up? You've kind of got Avowed, in theory, from buying Obsidian, but it depends when that started development. But I guess, like, Starfield is now classed as an Xbox exclusive, but it started development before they bought them. So, like, you would assume that they buy all this stuff up and then go, look, we've got all this beautiful Game Pass money, which is another talking point that we'll get to. You guys make whatever you want, and we'll just put it on Game Pass. That'll all be one lucrative thing, and then we put it on the cloud, people can play it wherever they want, and that's their whole play. But I think there are so many big issues with, like, you know, I mentioned the Game Pass revenue, like they're about to put their prices up for Game Pass in October. So it's like, alongside Disney Plus, alongside the amount of other subscription services that are doing the same thing, I just don't think any of this works in a wider sense, in a macro level. And then you got the micro stuff where they don't really have the games. And one of the things that I mentioned in the news is that Starfield massively spiked Series X sales. It was just like, the games do sell the consoles, like, funnily enough. And it's just like, I guess, what's your general thoughts on that stuff? So the whole thing of trying to plan for the future, trying to plan for the next big thing, but missing the thing that's right in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it just before we started recording. Cynical, Ewan, was the word you used, and it's absolutely right. It really is. Like, the whole thing just so filled with cynicism and business jargon and nothing else at this point. And it just steadily has gone that way more and more over the years. Because, I was like you, I was an Xbox player, and then I jumped over to PlayStation because there was just not enough going on the Xbox side with Xbox One, as everyone knows. And Microsoft have admitted themselves that they kind of lost that part of the console war and have been on the back foot ever since. But weirdly, they haven't looked at what PlayStation did right and then just tried to emulate it instead. I mean, fair play to them for trying something different, but they're the corporation, they're the console of quantity over quality. Whereas we went to PlayStation to play all of those big name IPs that we think about as you think about the year and you think about all the big games that came out on PlayStation for whatever year you're talking about. And Xbox just hasn't had any for years.
No,
Starfield is the first big name,
In so long. Like, if you think about 2023, it's Starfield, it's Baldur's, it's those huge things. But like, Ewan, what do you think of the general health of their first party stuff?
It strikes me as concerning here, because what we've got, you touched on the idea that, like, you know, the big kind of move that they're going for here and have been for a while now is we are going to buy to make up for our own lack of trying to get the right word here, but kind of like innovation, I guess you could bring me to say that, or, you know, how's the right...
Like, investing in first party.
Yeah, like, when Sony was doing the PlayStation 4, they really hit the ground running on their exclusive games, you know. But the PS3 lacked in terms of, like, hardware utility. It still had some great exclusives, and the PlayStation 4 was this amazing marriage of, like, we've got the amazing exclusive games, and now we've got a piece of hardware that easily outclasses the competition because Microsoft completely fumbled the bag in E3 2013 and just completely... Mm-hmm. You know, messed everything up. The thing that strikes me here is that the only motivation that I'm seeing from Microsoft convey to me, the thing that I see here is come to Xbox because you can play your old games and we're going to probably eventually buy the games that you want to play. There's nothing there that speaks to me as like, well, we have like, you know, this amazing kind of network of developers that are obviously that they're going to craft their own IP and do something amazing. And again, just obviously they have Bethesda now. They have a bunch of studios, but it still seems so entirely predicated as a content library and platform. And even with the leaks, you know, from that we've seen today, a lot of it seems to be geared around like, oh, we're going to remaster. And again, I'm really excited for a Fallout 3 remaster or a Fallout New Vegas remaster and stuff like that. But looking across at Xbox, the only incentive I see to eventually get one of these consoles is to, well, I'll be able to play all the stuff, and then also maybe they'll make, maybe they'll just buy everything, and then I'll have no other alternative. It's just, it's how the business game is played, but yeah, like said to Cy before it came on, it just comes across as markedly cynical. There's nothing there, and like the whole conversations that Spencer had, I think it was last year or earlier this year, where he was basically like, oh yeah, no, we've lost, so I guess all we can really do now is just buy everything and then go cloud, and it just it's kind of like, it's just really miserly. I don't like it.
I think that like that whole thing about when he was on that interview with Kinda Funny, it was after Redfall, so yeah, it would have been this year, because it was in the aftermath of Redfall being like on fire, and he was just like, look, great games aren't going to save us, we're in third place. He's like, we lost the most important generation because that's when everyone built up their digital libraries, and we can't compete with that, so we need to do something else. And it's weird because if you look back in like Xbox history, like you had the Xbox Indie Marketplace and you had Xbox Live, and like you had all these sort of like big moves forward that like did change everything. And like, I get them trying to aim high again. And it's like, it's funny when they did the 20th anniversary, they put out like it was like a 20-part documentary thing. Yeah. It might all be in one file now, but it's on their YouTube channel. Well, they were very honest about like how much they got wrong. Cause then the last time they tried the big thing was all the DRM. Everyone has their digital library stuff at the start of 2013. Like you said, and they messed it up. And in that making of thing, they were just like, that's kind of what we do. Like we try these things and they mess up and whatever. And the next big thing is cloud consoles. I'm going to get onto like the next Xbox because they're building a fundamentally cloud-powered Xbox for 2028. And it's just... it's in Ewan's face. It's one of those things where, like, you know, they're going to try these big moves because I think they think it's in their DNA. And, like, to some degree, like, it has worked out really well in the past. The 360 era was incredible, but you've got to get it right.
I mean, yeah, they do have the track history for it. Like, you can't pretend that they don't. You know, the Xbox Live was a major step forward for online gaming. The Kinect, for better or for worse, sold gangbusters, you know, was a big deal. They've done lots of important hardware stuff, so I can see why they would look at it and be like, yeah, we're just going to focus on the hardware and just buy a bunch of people to help us create a library of software. But why don't they have a big, interesting library of software then? Like, Game Pass is a great deal for a bunch of average games that you'll put some time into and then move on to the next one. So, it remains that, as we said earlier, gaming is about those big titles. And
yeah, it's almost like they don't want to admit that it's like that simple.
This is not to interrupt anything, but it's a really interesting reflection of where we were at in 2013, where, you know, we talk about, or Microsoft, Phil Spencer talks about how Sony won that console generation because, you know, they did so badly, Xbox did so badly at E3 with the DRM stuff. The reason why PlayStation was so effective there was because it was a simple message, like that whole famous thing of like, oh, this is how you play games on PlayStation 4, and it was just them handing the game to each other and stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah.
What Xbox should be doing right now is, as we get further and further into this, and they're talking about like building up digital libraries or whatever, but Xbox is still the, if you have like an original Xbox or a 360 or a One, and you have a Series X, it is still fundamentally easier. Like, the possibility of actually playing backwards compatible is across those consoles. And rather than driving that home and saying that if you get an Xbox console, you will never have to worry about having to buy a game again, like to, in order to actually access it and play it. You'll never have a situation where you have to fork out $50 to play Red Dead Redemption on a new Xbox console, because it fundamentally exists and it works across those things. But instead of leaning into that simple message, we're getting all this, you know, arty-farty stuff about, like, you know, cloud gaming and, like, the fact that you can get, like, all this. It's like, you've fundamentally got a great, simple message there about your platform that I don't think they've ever really hammered home or taken advantage of fully.
Well, they kind of, like, they try to nail it down a couple of different times. Like, they, at the beginning of this generation, the series generation, whatever the hell you want to call it, and as Game Pass sort of came in, it was Phil Spencer saying, oh, we'll have, you know, like, I think it was like two or three, you know, big exclusive AAA games kind of thing every year, and we'll stick to that. And they just haven't been able to. It's just like the turnaround just isn't there. And then it's like going forward. He said it again this year. He's like, going forward, I think he's like, we're going to have four exclusives every year on Game Pass. And it's like, and then there was another member of Microsoft / Xbox saying that Starfield was the starting gun for that sort of new model. And it's like, well, maybe it is. Like, you're a few years into the gen. You've taken a while to get there. Maybe they do have enough irons in the fire to finally do it. You can see what they're going for. It's like, you can see that, like, monthly model, you get incredible games, whatever. It's just like, there's the underlying thing of that the subscription model fees don't support the amount of money that goes into those projects, which is why they have to put the money up in October. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Disney Plus has had two price hikes in the last year. There's another one coming soon. Which is another thing, but it's just that whole idea of just believing in it so much that you're not, like, financing things in the right way. One thing I was going to throw in here is that the Warner Brothers acquisition, Phil Spencer mentions that it wouldn't be for the IP itself. Obviously, they wouldn't be buying Batman. They would be buying, assumedly, some portion of just the revenue, like, just to get games on Game Pass, do deals.
Is it WB, you know, games like specifically? That. Or is it...
They just say Warner Brothers in the email, so I guess... Yeah, but I mean, WB themselves have been back and forward all the AT&T acquisition stuff and deciding how they're going to put their games out. And Mortal Kombat 1 is a result of that. We could have gotten Injustice 3, but we got Mortal Kombat.
I just remember
instead.
That, like, 3 years ago, they were floating WB Games as a potential asset sale and no one came in to buy them.
The way that would change, I was years ago, I was like, what if, because obviously Sony has pretty much succeeded in making Spider-Man a PlayStation character, like, he's largely thought of as that, he's marketed as that, would Xbox go out there and get Batman and get the next Arkham game, or just have, you know, Xbox and Batman PlayStation
Suicide Squad kill the Justice Spider-Man. League Batman. it's still good
we can make it work. So the next talking point, and we can go, everything kind of connects to everything else, but the next thing to cover here is the new Xbox consoles, and there are two that have been leaked. One is the next Xbox Series X, which is a cylindrical tower. It looks like a big tower speaker thing, which is an all digital console. Like, it's a 2 terabyte drive, and it's a digital only, no discs. Obviously, you know, very much trying to encourage you to get Game Pass. That's one of the only ways you do stuff. And the new controller that comes with it has a gyroscope, which is quite interesting because I feel like that's them hinting that the DualSense, the PlayStation 5, the haptic stuff has legs, and the more gimmicky stuff you can do with the controller, the better. You know, they tried that stuff with the Xbox One. There was the pressure triggers and everything, but nothing really made that much use of it. But Si, what do you think of the mid-step one? Then we'll get to the stupid cloud system going forward.
I think this is a stupid decision, to be quite plain about it. Like, we're at the point now where you can buy these consoles. Absolutely, finally, there's some availability, it seems. But I don't really see what this offers that would make anyone want a fancy controller, is that's about the upgrade that you get. You lose a disc drive. Like, it's still a Game Pass machine, even more so, because it doesn't have a disc drive. And it doesn't have, we've just talked about it a lot, but Xbox doesn't have the supporting first party or big titles to make you go, oh, it's well worth me getting these on a new console so they can see them even more in high quality, high def, or 8K or whatever. It doesn't have the games to support that, especially if they're coming through the cloud as well, which is already, like, you know, goodness knows what state they're going to be in when I get them on my screen over the internet. I don't know. It feels really soon. I suppose it's not, but that's just indicative of this console generation.
It's like trying to predict where it's going to be in another 5 years.
Right, exactly. And this is apparently coming the fiscal year of next year. So sort of next summer they were looking at it, at the point that these documents were produced anyway. I just feel like it would be a massive bomb. Like, I don't feel that people are interested in this across the board. I could be completely wrong, but I don't see people clamoring for not even a pro PS5 either. Neither, really. No. I don't think people are interested in either, because we haven't remotely topped out what the consoles can do yet. It just feels like they're doing it because, you know, that's what we did for the last couple of generations. So that's what we know, quote unquote, works.
Yeah, I think it's a thing as well in terms of the Series S versus the Series X. I'm pretty sure they're about like 51-49% market share. They're very, very close. It's like, I'm sure the Series X is slightly overselling the Series S. I might have got them the wrong way around. Mm-hmm. But my point is there's not like a market leader for it out of the two of them. All their stats, all their market sales are always combined anyway when we talk about Xbox sales. Right. They sort of overlap. There was a quote from Phil Spencer last year saying that he thinks the Series S is ultimately the thing that will win overall. And he thinks that that's like the plan overall. There was a whole bunch of stuff that came out about how internally... they view the Series S as the main console and the X is the deluxe optional
one. Isn't that the console that's holding the games back?
I was about to say, well, exactly. Every single person has been saying, Microsoft, guys, you're holding us back. This thing is like a like an anchor around our like legs at the minute. Please, you know, it's hold. That's so. Is this midlife generation upgrade? Is this purely a digital machine? They haven't announced the disc version.
So, well, so that's the thing. It's like, it would be like a midlife release, but it wouldn't. Assumedly, it wouldn't change any of the power output or anything. It would just be a digital only Series X. So it is just a Series X minus the disc drive.
This is the frustrating thing, right? So
with double the capacity.
By doing that as well, anyone who actually owns a Series X right now and is still stockpiling their own physical media library of games...
Which is entirely me.
If you were then to go ahead and do your sole mid-generation upgrade as a digital-only box, how does that inspire any confidence if you, as a Series X owner, own physical media... That's basically telling you that, well, when the next generation comes around, are you still going to be supporting that physical kind of launcher for me to play my games? It just strikes me as straight, like, you know, Microsoft being, oh, we're all very pro-consumer here. We all power to the gamers and all that stuff. And it just, it's so antithetical to that because the more you lean into digital stuff, the more you are beholden to that one digital library, that one marketplace. And yeah, I think this, I'm an exception. I know this. I'm not a guy who embraces digital media by and large. I don't do Games Pass. I don't do PlayStation Plus's extra tiers. I never did PlayStation Now. But I'm also just kind of like, surely there comes a point here where people are like, this might not be the fair deal that they're hyping it up to be.
You'd think so. I mean, it's a very captive audience. Like you said, marketplace-wise, you're then stuck to whatever those price points are. And like, but assumedly you'd have Game Pass, but the pricing models or whatever, like in terms of the actual, you know, buying a copy of something, it would be whatever they tell you that it is. For me, like, I do embrace that digital stuff. I'll try anything at least once. I'll stick with certain ones or whatever. But for me, the way they've approached Xbox backwards compatibility, not everything is on the digital storefront. Like if you want to play... Dead to Rights or Lord of the Rings Lego or whatever, you have to buy the disc and then it'll recognize it and it'll let you play it, but there's not a digital version of that. And so that was the way they sort of split the library, was like the library is really vast and impressive and incredible and really, really cool, especially compared to Nintendo and PlayStation, or especially PlayStation, but that would go away. All those disc only backwards compact games would go away, which is a lot of original Xbox stuff and 360 stuff, which I think is like interesting because the industry overall has always tried to walk that line between art and technology. And there's not an assumption that in a technological technology medium in that space for phones and everything, there's not an assumption that everything before will work going forward. It's always the new shiny thing is the new thing. And maybe in the phone space, they support the last few years worth of models, but that's it. And I feel like games have tried to walk that line weirdly. And it's like, I wonder maybe when they look at their player data, how many people are taking advantage of those old things. And that wouldn't even necessarily be the argument. It should be that that's the option that you can play gaming history. But yes, that's a weird line for them to tackle.
Thing,
yeah.
I think it's that, like, it doesn't really matter if people are taking advantage of it or not. I feel like it should still be an option because, and we have this conversation with every console generation where it's like, backwards compatibility is always a conversation and, you know, the drive towards digital over physical every time. People do more and more on the side of digital every generation. It's kind of inevitable. But Xbox, and to their credit, they probably should. You know, they back themselves on the pat. They pat themselves on the back about actually having backwards compatibility, and that's great. But they also do stuff like this, where it's like, okay, so our mid-range upgrade is going to lose the disc drive. And Ewan, as you said, kind of implies that the next console probably won't have one as well, and they're obsessed with the cloud, blah, 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 blah. Well, that is antithetical to backwards compatibility and gaming preservation and stuff like that. If you're going to do this, you need to also put your money where your mouth is and buy all the code for every game ever released and put it on Game
Which
Pass.
Which is like...
No, look, we've got all of gaming history. Like, all of
it. Yeah, that's like the monopolistic attitude I would want them to have to past decades. Go resurrect stuff. Go give me, like, Atari libraries.
Literally impossible. Like, it's nonsense. Yeah. But that's the solution.
that's the thing is, I feel like for that conversation as well, it's kind of, it's been over to each individual publisher to put out those games. Obviously, they can then charge for them a lot of, I mean, that was the whole conversation. I forget who wrote it up. Might have been the Verge or Kotaku or something, talking to Xbox's own backwards compatibility team about the reality of those conversations and how so many studios were just like, we're not going to give it to you to put on the, we'll do a remaster. We'll do it properly. We'll charge people for it and we'll do things down the line. And so like recently, you know, you've seen like collections, like Konami have put out the Castlevania collections, Atari have put out Atari 50, and like publishers are separately doing their own collections, and some of them are better than others. Atari 50 is incredible. But stuff like that, I think, is another part of that conversation when it comes to backwards compatibility. And maybe on their side, it just isn't worth it. I don't know. Sure. I would want as many games as
and
possible.
And they want to exploit that, obviously, with like, you know, the leaks today talking about like a Fallout 3 remaster and stuff like that. So, you know, it's beneficial to them in the long run if they can be like, well, you know, the physical library isn't going to be available going forward, but we are going to put more effort into remastering these things that you still won't technically actually own physically.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
It'll be interesting if when they remaster Fallout, and we're going to get to the games that are on Bethesda's slate, but if they're remastered, well, they are remastering Fallout 3 and Oblivion, if the versions of them that are currently on the Xbox store that are automatically upgraded through HDR and everything else, if they get replaced, like Ubisoft replaced the original Assassin's Creed with the Assassin's Creed 3 with the remaster. Yeah, exactly. Like things like that. Yeah, that'll be interesting. So the next overall Xbox console, which is penned in for 2028, is a cloud-powered, fully digital console for cloud-powered games. I'll read their little blurb. This is obviously from an internal...
Old man yells at cloud. Sorry, I had to get that out of me.
So this is from an internal, assumedly PowerPoint, but it says, our vision, develop a next-generation hybrid game platform capable of leveraging the combined power of the client and cloud to deliver deeper immersion and entirely new classes of game experiences. To translate that, It's literally Crackdown 3. It's literally the idea of cloud-based computing for bigger, crazier games. There was a Lord of the Rings game a few years ago that The Verge have pointed out in their write-up that would cloud compute the armies and do all that sort of stuff in the background so you could focus on the things that are in the foreground or things that are more directly controllable. Crackdown 3 was meant to have that next level of a destruction in the cities and everything, but it would all be handled on the server side. When rubber hit the road or brass tacks or whatever, that stuff just couldn't be done. And Crackdown 3 shed all of that and released in a very threadbare. It was pretty much Crackdown 1 again. And so for me, I said this in the news, I'm not convinced of cloud computing stuff whatsoever. But if we talk about Microsoft wanting to make next big leaps and everything else, then maybe we buy a bunch of studios and tell them to cloud compute stuff and go, don't worry about computational stuff. We can do it on a server farm and we'll do it that way. You and you're doing a little face.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't see this. I agree with you completely, Scott. I don't see this as a feasible thing going forward, at least in the immediate, like, short term. And it's the computing space this would require in order to actually work, especially with how, you know, multiplayer focused a lot of these like big IPs are and stuff, and like how much strain is put on even current gen games to like load assets and stuff like that. I don't see this as a feasible thing going forward, and it strikes me as strangely it just seems like innovation for the sake of innovation's sake. And then what I mean by that is that there's no tangible use for this thing at this current moment in time. Yeah. We have powerful gray engines coming out, you know, we still haven't seen the full depths and capabilities of Unreal Engine 5, etc. You know, gaming is still going in that direction. I just think this is a weird obsession.
I tell you what I'll throw in as well before I pass to you, Si, is that an exchange between Phil Spencer and Microsoft executive Jean-Emile Elien, where Elien's sort of having a conversation with Phil Spencer about why studios shut down and the general plans for the future, and Spencer's talking about costs and profits and that kind of thing. He's, oh, we've never shut anybody down without, you know, due cause or whatever. And Elien is flagging that there are various other reasons for keeping, you know, studios alive, and they want to stick up for niche games and things like that. And Elien also mentions that if they're steering into cloud stuff and the amount of cloud partners that they have that they'll be working with, how they underestimate the realities of game design, how in the next few years, he literally says there could be a bloodbath regarding the amount of studios that might need to be shut, the amount of profits that aren't going to be made, etc. And that's another wrinkle to this, that like this level of bet on the like industry-wide bet on what people want to see and what people want to play and the amount of money getting put into it to turn it all around and put it on a monthly service is unbelievable. It's almost astronomically huge. I personally view it as a risk in it and everything else, but it's like to hear one of their own executives refer to it as a potential bloodbath is notable.
There are two sort of sides to this for me. Like, to sort of play devil's advocate a little bit, it's like with cloud-based sort of development and programming and stuff like that, it kind of reminds me of AI in the sense that in the, you know, the last few years, the speed at which AI has grown. Do you remember when we were all sort of laughing at the really weird generations of mishmash faces?
Here's Leatherface on the beach.
Yeah.
Got 20 fingers.
Yeah, it's weird pictures of Mario Kart and stuff like that and whatever. Mm. And now we've gotten to the point where it's genuinely concerning so quickly.
You can replace your eyes in a call.
Yeah, stuff like look at that, a camera, right? People are making awful mods for Resident Evil 4 that swap out the voice actors they don't like, which is just disgusting. And so maybe it's kind of like that. Maybe by 2028, when this is predicted to launch this console, cloud computing will be a lot better than we're giving it credit for. Mm-hmm. That being said, it does sound incredibly expensive, which would be prohibitive for smaller studios and that kind of thing. And to get back to sort of like the meat of it, really, it's like, is it time for this? Do we need this? You can't even develop a game with the thing that, you know, what we've got now. Games that come out now don't work as it is. So why are we trying to leapfrog forward when everything right now is in an unplayable state? Like, can't we figure things out before we try and, you know, initiate the next stage, please?
Yeah, they couldn't even guarantee you a collapsing skyscraper in Crackdown, let alone trying to fully compute a whole, whatever it is, what an unfathomable idea they've got to bring together across the next half decade. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that stuff. Obviously, we're covering this in the morning of Tuesday the 19th. This broke overnight for us. It kind of broke in the morning, actually. It was about an hour. It was like 7 a.m. or something for us. So I imagine there'll be a lot of conversations. When Phil Spencer wakes up, he's going to have some stuff to say. most of them. I think he'll do the thing that we said at the very beginning, which is he'll just say, it's conversations from 2 or 3 years ago. Don't worry about it. We're not doing that.
I'm the game guy.
I'm just a little, you know, Phil Spender. Don't worry about it. I'll just get some get some stuff done. So the last thing on here, the big old stuff, and the last big leak is Bethesda's entire in-development and upcoming lineup. So we'll kind of go one by one, and we'll just flesh this out a little bit. First of all is the Fallout 3 remaster. Apparently that's coming fiscal year 2024, so that's between October this year and September next year. Quick thoughts on this, Si or Ewan? Really? Okay, that's cool. I'm not like a huge Fallout person, but
I'm unfortunately just going to caveat all of this with I don't think I like any Bethesda games at all. So I don't.
Interesting.
Have
you sound like me. Woo-hoo! That was me before Starfield and Skyrim.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I am a big fan of Fallout 3. And New Vegas is my baby. I love that one the most. So if they get that remastered and stuff, then I'll be even more excited. But yeah, it's yet another thing that I love that I can't play. And maybe that'll get me to buy an Xbox at some point. I don't know. It's a shame. I think Fallout 3, it's kind of like that and Skyrim. They're the two definitive Bethesda RPGs, aren't they? It makes sense to have a new version of that game if you're going to reach back into Bethesda's library. So, yeah, I'll get into the Oblivion stuff when you bring up Oblivion, because I have some interesting kind of thoughts about why they're doing Oblivion as a remaster. But certainly, you know, Fallout 3, makes perfect sense to me, especially.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Yeah, I'm quite surprised that it hasn't happened already. So it feels probably about time, especially considering Fallout 4, I think, was it sort of, from what I remember, sort of landed a bit kind of, some people were not necessarily keen on it. And obviously 76 is a whole other thing. So this is an easy win, hopefully, in theory, as long as it runs fine again. Bethesda, or runs as fine as a Bethesda game can. This should be sort of recovery for the state of Fallout from the last few years, hopefully.
If the characters' clothes can stay on, we will consider it a win. Because even Starfield had clothes flying around everywhere. But I feel like I would kind of want them to put Fallout 1 and 2 back out there. I know that some of the licensing stuff
that
is a bit a bit held up because it was like Black Isle and it became Bethesda or whatever. But you would hope that they see more from that. I tell you what's interesting to throw in here is that there's no mention, and it was a dream project, of a collaboration between Bethesda and Obsidian. It would probably be something that would be greenlit years down the line, but the assumption was that because Xbox/Microsoft now owns the original teams again, that they could do New Vegas 2 or do whatever.
And they need to do that. I'm sorry, New Vegas is like one of the greatest RPGs I've ever played. Like that to me is definitive Fallout, and it makes no sense to me that they're not. They should be doing something on this. Surely there is just, even though it's just one guy in like the janitor's closet, just drawing up sketches of like the Wanderer or Rex the dog. Like, just get us back there, man. Because I miss it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Outer Worlds isn't on here either, and that was Obsidian's sort of New Vegas-y meets like sci-fi kind of thing. There's not a mention of that on here either. So potentially after Avowed, I guess that would free up. In a wider sense, like what they could potentially do. There's the Fallout 3 remaster, assumedly coming before September next year. We have the Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion remaster that was meant to release last year, but didn't. But Ewan, what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, this makes no sense to me. I mean, I wouldn't call myself an Oblivion hater. I think there's lots of great stuff about that RPG. But it looked ugly back in 2006. And I still think if you do that now, it's like the jankiest kind of foot that Bethesda have put forward, and like it's so notoriously like just looks awkward and weird and just is so meme-tacular that to put...
Oh, I've definitely got way more positive memories of it than
like
you, but
I thought it was good, but like I could be completely talking and like as just a complete idiot right now, which wouldn't be surprising. I do it very often. That one surprises me quite a bit because it's always struck me as like a wee bit of an ugly duckling. Obviously there's some great, you know, classic RPG Bethesda vibes from it. But if I was them, I'd maybe be looking at doing something with Morrowind. I think if I was looking back at the older Elder Scrolls games before Skyrim, when Bethesda had its RPG kind of like modern RPG kind of blueprint established, I'd be looking at remakes. I wouldn't be looking at remasters. I would be looking back into something like a Morrowind and going, okay, well, what did we do well with that game? What was missing from Skyrim that we did really well in Morrowind? Can we blend those two things together and make it better? I think when you remaster it, you are leaving a lot on the table. I think those games would benefit hugely from the full remake treatment.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think?
Yeah, I actually agree with that in terms of remaking over remastering, because I feel like a lot of people that, because Skyrim is now over 10 years old and, you know, generations have moved on and stuff like that, like Oblivion is obviously going to appeal to a lot of nostalgia for a lot of people, but there will be people that go back to it after Skyrim and be like, yeah, this is really old, weird jank, even with a new coat of paint. But so like, I think it could do, depending on what they do to it, but it definitely needs a bit more attention. But I can see why. Again, it's the same with Fallout 3. For me, I can see why they're doing it. It's a supremely popular game. It was a big step up at the time for Elder Scrolls. It makes perfect sense to me. It's another quite an easy holdover into Elder Scrolls 6, I suppose. So, yeah.
For me, it's like it's the big nostalgic one. Like it's the, I think so. It has so much of a connotation or connection to the 360. Like it was just, I remember everyone got a 360 and Oblivion. It was the two things. I saw it played everywhere. I didn't personally gel with Oblivion. Skyrim was my first Elder Scrolls that I fell in love with. I just couldn't get on board with Oblivion or Morrowind. I wonder because like the development time of this obviously predates the acquisition, the ZeniMax stuff, all the ongoing trial stuff. And I wonder how much since Xbox has come in, have they said actually delay that, polish it up, we'll kind of tap into the Xbox nostalgia side of it. And maybe do before and after style screenshots and remind you of 2006, remind you of the 360 era, because that was by far the strongest era in Xbox history, at least so far. So that could be a way for them to like roll that out. But yeah, like I said, it was according to the document, it was meant to release last year and it didn't. Next one down is Doom Year Zero, which is interesting because it ain't Doom 3, or it's not. I mean, it potentially is, but it makes me, title-wise, gives me Mortal Kombat 1 vibes. Makes me wonder if they're doing some sort
another
of
another reboot,
like a reboot thing, or like the origin of Doom guy. Oh,
give me Doom Origin. Give me Doom Origin.
They kind of already did it in Eternal, so I'm like,
go even further back.
Yeah, I genuinely think that's a great launching point, what they did with Eternal. Like, you really could have some crazy fun. Genuinely throw like time travel in there or some kind of nonsense. Like, the third game in a trilogy or a franchise reboot at this point, they will need to do something different with it to spice it up. So the title is very intriguing to me. And also, I mean, I guess, as we say, this was from several years ago. This is planned to come out this year. It's clearly not going to happen.
Alongside two bits of DLC, whatever, for this year and next year as well.
But this is before some of the controversy surrounding Mick Gordon and stuff like that, which feels like a big part of why we don't know what's going on with Doom, because you can't you need to fill that massive void correctly and you need to announce it in the right way. And there's going to be backlash no matter what they do, because he's not a part of it anymore. And he's such a part of that blueprint of those first two games. But hopefully they're still trucking along with it, because I'm ready for a new Doom now, I think.
That is such a good point about Mick Gordon. That thing was so unsolved. I know they went back and forth a lot.
There was a huge mess.
Yeah, a lot of scrapping, a lot of like, well, this is the email you sent me, you didn't pay me for this, I got this deadline, whatever. I know there was some resolution on that, but the ostensibly the resolution from Gordon's side was, I'm not working with these people ever again. And he just is the audio footprint of Doom. They have to try and like unpick all that stuff. The idea of sort of like, I guess, doing something, in lore-wise, there's that big gap where he's like stuck in hell and he's becoming the Doom Slayer, and he goes from a marine to like the crazy,
that makes
hardcore
sense as
Bulky
well
man.
For the title, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, so I'm just thinking,
in a
like,
Batman
if you wanted...
kind of way, this is where I began my training, being Doom that guy one begins. Demon at a guy.
Yeah, he's got to climb out of a big pit or something. I just, but still, like, yeah, I personally don't want a backstep. I want going forward. I loved Eternal so much, I just want them to keep going forward with stuff. I think I'm a bit burnt out on origin stories. I like my characters mysterious. I don't want the origins of Sephiroth, for the love of God, in that mobile game, the Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis. I don't need everything being fleshed out. But I guess we'll see how that goes. You and thoughts on Year Zero?
Yeah, no, I think it's fun. Like, again, like, as someone who's only like a casual Doom enjoyer, like, I really appreciate the space that series occupies and the FPS canon. I don't know, like, Year Zero, like, do you maybe go back and like innovate on the shooty aspects, maybe add in some more melee stuff, make it a little bit more fantasy, integrate more of that into it? I don't know, it just sounds really cool. I'm always down for more Doom.
More Doomies. The Eternal fleshed out tons of the lore and brought in like more melee weapons and stuff as well, so they could be going in that direction. The next one down is Todd Howard's Indiana Jones game, which apparently was meant to release last year. I thought that thing was way earlier in development than it is, and there was an update earlier this year from Howard himself saying that it's a dream project and he's loving working on it, and now that Starfield's wrapping up he has more time to put into it and everything. I personally couldn't care less about Indiana Jones, but I you and I know you're way more of a fan than I.
I love Indy. This is like the one, this is like Spider-Man on PlayStation for me. Like, I already had a PlayStation by the time they announced Marvel's Spider-Man, but if I hadn't and they'd announced it, I would have gotten a PlayStation for it. So indie is probably, you know, I'm just still desperately chasing that LucasArts nostalgia, man. Like, whenever there's a crumb of it out in the wind, I'll be scurrying after it like a hungry rat. Like, I just need more indie in my life, and like, I hopefully, like, this could be like a definitive Indiana Jones game, because we've only really had like one mega good one. Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen. I literally have no idea what a Bethesda Indiana Jones game could look like. I'm going to pray that it's not first person.
Well, it's made by Machine Games, so it's like, are they using like the Wolfenstein engine? I guess that would be first person, but then it's like whips and swinging and whatever in first
person. Have that iconic character and to make it so that you only see his shoes or his hands would be the dumbest thing ever, and I can totally see them doing it.
Yeah, customizable whips, so you see all the little handles.
Oh, that's how you see the hat.
God.
You see the bottom of the hat.
Yeah,
if you look up, you can see the peak.
Side thoughts on Indiana Jones?
Same as you. It's not a franchise that I have a whole lot of experience with anyway, actually. But like, I think it's a cool, interesting thing, and it always has been since we've known about it. It's like, that's a weird addition to their catalogue. So,
yeah, I definitely didn't see it coming. Like, right. Todd Howard going from Fallout and Elder Scrolls to Indiana. I mean, you can tell it's a dream project.
Exactly. Like, good for him. So, chasing a dream project. Yeah, as you sort of alluded to, we have no idea how far along this is. I expect that it probably got paused along the way at some point because Starfield kind of demanded everything, you know, everybody's attention. So this could be a long way off from it yet. But yeah, if it's, I would like, I know it's so obvious to be like, if it's kind of like their sort of take on an Uncharted game, that it's like an obvious fit from the style, but something like that, like a third person climbing around, that sounds fun, even though I don't really know the movies.
That could totally be fun. Yeah, that could totally be the play. Like, you have Uncharted on the PlayStation side, just make us an Uncharted, which in itself, like, those general sort of tropes and everything were from an indie anyway. So it's like, why not reclaim that stuff?
I know, that's why it seems really obvious to say that, but like, sometimes obvious is good.
Yeah, and they have the ability to sort of leapfrog the next Uncharted anyway and be like, we're the definitive one. Yeah. And at the minute, we don't even know if is any more Uncharted. Two sequels are also confirmed. Ghostwire Tokyo is getting a sequel before October next year, and Dishonored 3 before October 2024. Ghostwire, I was very surprised by because that game, I mean, it was one of those things that kind of, it came around just as the acquisition was being first mentioned. So all of a sudden, Sony just binned off all their marketing and were just like, why would we advertise this? It's going to be leaving us anyway. And so it's one of those things where I thought that game was fascinating to a point. I loved it to a point. It was only about halfway through, a couple of hours, 3 hours in, 4 hours in, where it just became another Ubisoft open world game. And I was just, it felt like they ran out of dev time because there's so much curation and so much great concept, like work for the ghosts and the exploration and everything at the beginning, and the scene setting and the art direction and everything and the combat. But it just, it falls apart when it was like, go find 20 of these things, go, you know, do arbitrary Far Cry style Ubisoft things. And I was so like, oh God, to that stuff that I just never finished it. But I guess, yeah, what are either of you or Ewan, what do you think of, like, I guess them attempting to do more?
Yeah, good. I mean, it's a new thing. At least it's something that released in the last few years that they're wanting to actually commit to and make something out of. So, you know, I never played it. I thought the art direction looked appealing. I thought there was an intriguing premise there. Disappointing to hear that it was basically kind of devolving into UB formula the further you got in. But maybe they can, you know, rectify those issues with the sequel. I think it looked like one of those, it looked like a very obvious game of like, okay, the sequel is obviously going to be way better because like you've got this solid premise, but there's clearly stuff here from seeing the previews and trailers that you could flesh out a little bit further. So yeah, I mean, That's kind of more of what you want. You want Microsoft and Bethesda to be betting on new IP, and this is the new IP, and if they can make the sequel, maybe it'll be a huge step up, and Ghostwire Tokyo will reach a bigger... But that said, I don't see this being like everyone's going to be rushing out to buy Ghostwire Tokyo 2.
No. I think because they've got Ghostwire : Tokyo, they could do like different locations. They could almost Assassin's Creed it, where you sort of dive into what if this place was possessed by demons at night and do Ghostwire New York or whatever it
is. Hey, I'm ghosting here.
I'm haunting people here. And that might be a thing to do. Side thoughts on Ghostwire Tokyo sequel or Dishonored 3?
Yeah, it's sort of surprised about Ghostwire getting a sequel, but because it was one of those games, and to your point, what you say about the marketing kind of stop, that probably didn't help with the fact that it just kind of came out and it seemed like not that many people were talking about it. It scored moderately well from a quick look now, but I have a little bit of investment in Tango Gameworks, the studio behind it, because it was founded by Shinji Mikami, Mr. Resident Evil, so I've always sort of followed it a little bit. I'm quite surprised, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there, they're going to be disheartened that it's not Evil Within 3, which is what the original Ghostwire started off as. But yes, I agree, new IP, or at least slightly fresher IP, and there was something always very intriguing about it. even though I didn't get around to playing it, and by the sounds of it, I probably shouldn't, because that sounds like, that sounds like my nightmare. 4 hours of good game, like, and then suddenly an open world.
That's the thing. It's like, it's worth seeing what they did. I've just had to Google that, because I had a vague memory that Shinji Mikami left Tango, and he has. Was announced at the start of this year, so assumedly he's gone now, after Hi-Fi Rush. But yeah, there's a lot of promise with the Ghostwire, like, mechanics, the way you do all the combat, the different spells you can do and everything. So a lot of potential. Dishonored 3 is cool as well. Yeah, I mean, Arcane, I guess, getting back to their roots or whatever at this point. They think they put them on the map. I hated Deathloop, so more Dishonored, I guess. I've not vibed with an Arcane game since Dishonored 1. So, like, for me, I'm that weirdo. I'm that guy.
You didn't like 2?
Like, they were good back in the day.
You weren't a 2 guy. You weren't a Dishonored 2 guy.
No, I just kind of bounced off it. I thought, like, the level of gore that was in it didn't match up with the moves I was doing, and I was just like, it feels so disconnected. I just didn't enjoy those level designs, and the AI was like spot on me from across the map and whatever. I vibed so much more with Dishonored 1, and I keep trying Prey, but I can never vibe with Prey. I know Prey's one of Josh Brown's favorite games, and he's always holding it up next to my window as I'm trying to sleep. I know I should play it, but I'm never gonna get there. But what are, either of you, Si, what do you think of Dishonored 3?
Yeah, Prey is the one that I put the most time into, but admittedly, I didn't finish it. I feel like this is another one of those podcasts where I've come on and just said I don't like video games, because I don't like...
I've never played a video game.
Dishonored does nothing for me. Deathloop looked boring as hell, but Dishonored, I tried it, and it didn't really do anything for me. But again, a logical thing. And again, we also have to realize that this was on the plan several years ago. So it's not like this is a reactionary, oh no, Redfall was a disaster, let's go back to Dishonored thing. It was always planned that they would get back to the series. And there are so many fans that will be happy to see it when it comes back. So I think good for them for trying out a few new IPs, absolutely. I don't think we're ever going to get sequels to Redfall or Deathloop, are we? So let's go back to the well for a little while to the thing that definitely works.
They're going to commit to Redfall or something?
For 10 years, yeah, we're going to make it a game in 10
years. Commit it to game jail.
Awful.
So I'll throw a couple more things in just to round this out, because we only have project code names for these, but we can just talk about them for a couple minutes, which is Project Kestrel, which was meant to arrive by this year, and it has an expansion apparently, Project Platinum. But the more interesting thing is an unannounced licensed IP game. So it's just something that's Bethesda either developed or published, I guess in the vein of an Indiana Jones in terms of it potentially being publishing, that is some other licensed IP that would want Bethesda to be near it.
Yeah, I wonder if this was also picked up around the same time as Indiana Jones, if it's from the same deal, like maybe they cut a deal for two different IPs from the same film studio or something like that. But
maybe it's Star Wars. Maybe a Bethesda Star Wars RPG would whip. After doing Starfield as well, it makes perfect sense.
Just reskin it. I feel like Star Wars is like Ubisoft's having their Star Wars game. There's obviously more Respawn stuff coming. Like, Star Wars has been greenlighting things left, right, and center, but they so far haven't been connected to Bethesda and stuff. But yeah, I guess you and thoughts on either of them.
I think if it's part of that same Lucasfilm games batch, then that would maybe make sense. I think if you had a Bethesda Star Wars RPG, it'd probably be the closest thing we would get to a new KOTOR, because obviously the KOTOR remake, I'm just going to assume that thing is dead and in some bloody Sarlacc stomach getting digested very slowly at this point. We have that terrible Quantic Dream thing that's come in that is going to...
Eclipse.
That's years away. So, you know, I mean, it's completely just random guess there. I think the Lucasfilm Games connection would make sense, because no other IP is really springing to mind in terms of something that Bethesda would touch.
Just watch now, it'll be a Land Before Time. That's Lucas.
I mean, maybe they do a...
Let me play as Ducky, damn it.
Yeah. maybe they do a Marvel thing. I don't know. I don't know if Disney... Lucasfilm Games is kind of autonomous within that kind of setup, so they'd have to make a different deal. If it's come at that point in time... it's interesting to see Bethesda reach out into licensed games. I'm a big licensed game proponent?
Proprietor? Fan of.
I like licensed games. they take me back to a cozy little time where you could go and watch TMNT in cinemas in 2007 and play the Ubisoft time game and 100% all the achievements in one day. So I think it's a project. It's named... I like Kestrels. Kestrels are a cool bird.
Kesha was cool in Splinter Cell. If we're just doing, why not? Overall, a historic leak in gaming history, the biggest thing I'd say since the GTA 6 leak a couple of years ago, and just ridiculous. I can't wait to see what the responses are. There's the Nintendo side that needs to be responded to. There's the Phil Spencer side. There's the console side. There's the Bethesda side. It's going to be a big old talking point, and chances are more stuff's broken as we've recorded this. But thank you to both of you for joining on this thing. This is very much just let me gather all together and talk about stuff for a bit. And a massive thank you to everybody for listening as well. And for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Cy White.
Goodbye.
And Ewan Parsons.
See you later, Indiana Jones.
We'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run FutureTools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of Lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.